Hey, good evening, everyone. It's Sandy Seashore. You're listening to Happy Hour on BBS Radio. I'm coming to you live from burned out San Diego from my home office in my pajamas. And on tonight's program, I have Tommy coming up in a second here. He's the talent coordinator for the Comedy Store in Hollywood. And then comedian Mark Gonzalez. And then a really interesting, at the bottom of the hour, we have Jahala coming up. She's an intuitive animal activist. And the Comedy Store is also located in La Jolla, and that's what I'm doing in San Diego. Anyway, let's welcome Tommy. Tommy!
Hey, how you doing, Sandy?
Pretty good. Pretty good. The weather's finally changed. It's getting chilly out here.
Yeah.
So, anyway, anything going on up there?
Well, I mean, just what's going on down there? The biggest show we got going on is in La Jolla this weekend. Jeff Garlin from Curb Your Enthusiasm's headlining down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What part does he play on?
He plays Larry's agent, Jeff Green.
Oh, okay.
So, and he's an executive producer on it. And he's very funny.
So Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday.
Pretty good.
I'm thinking, you know, we've got some good comics going with him. Court McCowan's opening for him. He's from Satellite Radio and. He's also performs in Vegas a lot and stuff, and he's like an actor guy. He's a nice looking guy, it's a great show. There's no ticket increase. It's just $20, two drink minimum, 21 and over. There's 8 and 10:30 shows, right?
That sounds great.
It really is. Just great. If you get a chance, you ought to sneak over there and see him, because I know you haven't seen him before.
Right.
You know?
What's tonight? Thursday. So Friday and Saturday.
I'm saying Friday and Saturday. One of the shows. You should go over and check it out.
Yeah, I think I will. And at the aftermath of the fires. I think we just got them all put out. And then we heard that there's a new Santa Ana coming up this weekend.
Right. It was bad. It really was. It put a damper on everything for everybody. I think clubs and all these things, even in L.A., even though L.A. is considered to be somewhat of a self-centered town, even the people here, the tone was one of feeling a little bit of pain for all the people who lost their homes.
Oh, in San Diego?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, there's a lot of the people that live up there, out where all the fires were, probably work down here, too. So.
You know, it didn't even feel like Halloween last night.
No.
I got really spooked last night. There was it was midnight, and my dogs sleep out in the yard most of the night because they like the outside.
Right.
And there's this giant, like, 2-foot possum sitting on the fence, and my dogs went nuts. And then in the middle of the night, I'm out in the backyard with a hose. Hosing my dog so they don't get to the possum, and hosing the possum. And
wow.
The possum just looked there and going, oh, great shower. You know, possums,
right.
They're really ugly looking. They look like giant rats.
Wow.
Anyway, so I did get spooked. But there was a lot of kids out in the street, but it didn't feel like Halloween at all.
Wow.
You know?
Nah, it didn't. It was a damper on it all, you know, because
LA,
of everything that's going on. But,
West Hollywood has the biggest, that's the biggest night.
Oh, I know. It's what they call it Gay Christmas.
Yeah, that's everybody's in the streets, you know, so I'm sure it was at full force last night.
Sure it was.
Mm-hmm.
Sure it was.
Did a lot of people come in costumes?
Yeah, there was a few people that came in here last night. It was slow here, but people came up from the down there on Santa Monica Boulevard up here and came in.
Mm-hmm.
So it was cool.
They had the best costumes.
Oh, yeah.
The
best one of all is our own piano player, Jeff Scott. He dressed up as Davy Jones. We've been watching him work on that for months. And it was just fantastic.
And then I'm sure the ghost came out, too.
Oh, yeah.
Enough of my ghost stories.
That's right.
Yeah, we're going to move past that right now.
Okay.
We're moving into the psychic world later on with intuitive animal activist.
Nice.
It didn't feel like it at all. Now we're in the holiday season. And I don't think people are particularly in the mood, you know, but it's all about spending, you know, it's a very commercial season coming up.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a great time to go out and go to things like comedy shows during
Absolutely.
This next holiday season.
Because
a lot of groups get together and come out. We've got good shows going down to La Jolla all fall.
Oh,
so
that's great.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
So you know what? I just started a MySpace thing.
Wonderful.
You know, I've been avoiding it for years.
Yeah.
And I just put one up. It's MySpace / My Comedy Workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's Paul. I looked at Paulie's. He's got like 45,000 friends.
Oh yeah.
And I look at these people. I'm like, it's a real community.
Yeah, it is.
I was like really against it, and all of a sudden I realized, well, this could be fun. You know, it's like it's socializing through your computer.
Right.
And I got a lot of my old comedian friends are up there, like Bob Saget.
Yeah.
and he went up, Andy Dick.
Oh, yeah.
Polly put on my thing. I have, I think, like 29 friends now.
That's good. That's great.
They're called friends.
Yeah, well, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And you know who has the most, don't you?
No, who?
Dane Cook.
Oh, really?
Like 2 million friends.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that his career built to where it was. It's not just based on his talent. It's that he built up a following by this MySpace thing, diligently worked at it for years.
It's a good marketing tool.
Yeah, it is.
I think. Yeah, and it's free, hey,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, he took the time to write everybody back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not that he writes 2 million people now, but he still writes lots of letters to people.
Huh.
So it's a great way to keep involved with people, too, show them that you care.
I'm really computer illiterate.
Yeah, well, I'm right behind you.
I went in there and I erased everything by accident and, you know, it was just Miriam straightened it out. She's doing my website.
Okay.
She's on there. Anybody needs a good web person, just go to my website. My new website should be up pretty soon. We're still working on it. And then, so any news about, okay, so we've got Jeff Garland coming in.
Well, Jeff Garland's the show this weekend. I like to remind people about that, too, for anybody that's just tuning in. Jeff Garland's from Curb Your Enthusiasm. He plays Larry's agent. And he's headlining for us down at the La Jolla Comedy Store this weekend.
Is he a funny comic?
He's a very good comic. He's from Chicago. You know, as your mom says, he's got a Midwest quality.
So he picks somebody to open for him?
Well, Court McCowan is opening for him. That's not just anybody. Court's headlines clubs around the country. He's on satellite radio.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a young guy named Mark Ellis who's opening up the show tonight. He's one of the guys your mom's developing. He's working out here, and he's very funny.
Do you know how hard it is for me to sit through comedy shows?
Is it?
Oh,
yeah. It's because you've been working on comics for years, too.
Since I was the fetus, I've been watching comedy shows.
Mm-hmm.
I was born when my dad dropped my mom off at the hospital. You heard the story, right?
Yeah.
And he went to the bowling alley to do a set.
That's right.
And, by the way, my dad was Elvis Presley's opening act.
Oh, yeah.
That's his claim to fame.
It was financially lucrative, too, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, he founded the comedy store.
Yeah.
My father. And my mom won it in a divorce settlement.
Yeah, but your mom thought of the name.
Yeah, she did.
Yes, she did.
She did.
Yeah, so it was a joint thing. They were doing something together, but you became your mom's vision, and your father's vision was being a comic. That's what it is.
And he's still doing it.
He still is doing it.
Las Vegas, yeah. 80 years old. My dad's still going. He's opening for Tony Orlando all the time.
Tony Orlando and Don. And he's really, you know, your dad's still very spunky.
Yeah, he sure is. That's what happens when you have something, you know, to do.
Yeah, when you love.
Retiring.
Right. And there's been many times where Sammy and Polly have gone out and done tours together and done shows together, and that is a fun thing there.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, my dad felt real bad because, you know, his son is, you know, got really well known, and, you know, my dad was sort of left in the dust, but that's what happens with new generations.
Yeah.
It's really hard to stay on top.
Yeah, it is.
You have to constantly be thinking and planning. And
well, the thing that your brother Polly is, he's a pop icon.
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah,
he's a pop icon from his MTV days, because MTV was developing during that time still, and he was one of the first people that was really out there, and he was very young. The original five VJs were all, you know, 30 and above by the time 1990 came around.
Well,
comes Paulie. He was 21 years old, and he's like, "What's up, buddy?" And he's out there, and everybody liked it.
That was the launching pad. The MTV was
The thing with MTV at that time, which I don't know if still true now, but MTV is left on everywhere, at the gym, at a bar, anywhere. It was on everywhere. So Polly was everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of his movies people make fun of, but if they want to, they got to go back beyond that and think of that. He had two that were really big. There were actually like three. Encino Man was a big hit. I remember because I was there. And he was funny in that. And then Son-in-Law was huge.
That's everyone's favorite, Son-in-Law.
Huge.
I liked In the Army also.
In the Your mom loves In the Army because she says it's relevant to today.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what is he doing now?
Well, Paulie's been done a lot of things. He's been on Entourage a couple times.
Now, people wonder, why do I have to ask you if he's my brother? Well, that's because I don't pay attention to his career too much. You know, I always find my family, we communicate through other people.
Yeah.
That's how we talk to each other.
Uh-huh. You all are four different playing fields, so it works. And since there's people that usually work for all four of you, that's why it happens.
Yeah. So when I need to get a message to my mother, I talk to you.
That's right.
And Tommy's the club psychologist as well. He's always putting out fires.
With comics. But you already know from running the store down there that it's something that it has to be done. Or comics, they can be conflictual personalities. You know?
No kidding.
For sure.
Absolutely. You've got a lot of egos.
Yeah. Well, most of us would just know one person like that, not have a room full of them. It's strange, but fun.
Yeah. You know? And, okay, well, I have Mark Gonzalez coming up. Has he been down there lately?
No, I haven't seen Mark work out here lately, but your mom actually passed him as a paid regular down in La Jolla. I remember I was there sitting next to her when she said she liked his work.
Yeah, because he's nice and clean and fresh and... You know.
He has what she's looking for, a quality.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yep.
Oh.
Okay.
All right, well, Sandy, I'm going to get back over here to run in the store, okay?
Okay, why don't we wait? Let's get Mark on the line.
All right.
First, and they're going to call him, like, in a couple minutes.
All right.
And yet Tommy answers the phone. He answers every single phone call, usually, at the Comedy Store.
I try to.
He also works at the cover booth. He's like the... Tommy's the... Like, how would you describe yourself?
Well, I put myself this way. I help run the Comedy Store with a team of people, but I stay down in the trenches.
Dealing with the public.
The public and the comics, because this is a personal business.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy is about a connection between the comic and each individual, not just the crowd. And then the crowd becomes one. It's about human contact, and I like human contact.
Mm-hmm. And then... we have three rooms on Sunset Boulevard, the main room, the original, and the belly room.
Oh, yeah.
And the main room holds around 400 people.
Uh-huh.
And then the belly room seats about 75.
Right.
And the original room is what, like 175?
Yeah, about 150, 175.
And then what is the La Jolla holds about 200?
I think a little over 200 at total capacity.
Yeah, that's really packed in.
That's really packed in, but a really good looking busy is 150 to 180.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I used to manage that place.
Because of the job you did, we're still there, right?
That's true.
I know it
5
is.
5 years.
Uh-huh.
I need to put a picture up of the Comedy Store. I need to get one up on my MySpace. There's these ivies that grow over the whole building at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, and I planted those like 20 years ago. Now the whole building looks like a bush.
Yeah, it's beautiful though. I think it's beautiful. It's got that. To get ivy to grow around a building like that is unusual.
And nobody ever waters them either.
Right.
So the basic overall vibe right now is everybody's just kind of dragging their feet a little bit.
Well, they have been, but I think one of the things that can be taken from the fires, which I think Governor Schwarzenegger wanted to point out too, is the way people come together. You know, the way our community came together to help the people that lost their homes and everything like that. And then because of what happened with Katrina, our government came in and really made sure FEMA was here to really help people.
Yeah, they sure kicked in.
Oh, yeah.
Around.
Oh, yeah, even Bush showed up out here, you know.
And then they were really on top of making sure nobody gets ripped off.
Uh-uh.
You know.
Uh-uh.
So I'm trying to – we're waiting for Mark to get on the air, and Mark's supposed to be on the air, like, right now.
Okay.
And I just want to wait until Mark gets on the air. Because
that's fine.
Otherwise, I'll be talking to myself.
And the people that are listening to you.
Yeah, that's true. And I also, there's this Fast Blast, Fast Chat, it's called, if anybody wants to send have a question for Tommy right now or Mark or my Jahala coming up, you can just send it in an email.
Okay.
They just click on a BBS Fast Chat.
Right.
And there it is. So, okay, well.
Are they going to be able to get Mark on the air with you there?
Well, I hope so. I'm trying to call Don. They're actually in the middle of changing servers.
Okay.
So everything's, like, flipping back and forth on the, you know, it's going from the old server to the new server.
Right.
So I have my show up online on their webpage.
Nice.
And it flips back to the old page and the new page, so... We don't know what's going on yet. And his line's busy, so I can't even get through to him.
Okay, I see.
But that's great. Remember when we did our first show, he didn't call up my guest, and it was you and me for like an hour?
Yeah, I know. I'm just feeling the pressure right now.
You have to answer the phone.
Not
right?
bad. I have to get down and get everything opened up. They're waiting on me down there.
Okay.
But that's the reason I hope they can get Mark Gonzalez on there. Not that I don't want to talk to the people that are listening to you.
I'm dialing. Listen to everybody. I'm dialing Don's number. You guys go knock on Don's door and tell him to pick up to call Mark. Huh. Well, this is internet radio, and it's not. So anything can happen.
Yeah, that's the way things
right?
go.
Huh. Well, I can get Mark on my cell phone. How about that?
There you go. Give him a shot. See what's going on with him.
Well, what I'm going to do is probably hang up the I'm going to hang up my phone.
Okay.
If he doesn't get Mark on the phone and get it, and then he'll get him right back.
All right.
That's the only way I think to get their attention right now. But I think in the future, I think we'll figure something else out here so that this doesn't happen.
That's okay, Sandy. I like talking with you. We have plenty to talk about.
Oh, I have a big dog show coming up in a couple weeks.
Oh, those are wonderful.
Yep. That's so much fun.
That sounds like a human study in itself, just to study the people that go to do those things.
Oh, no, it's really a crack-up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working on doing a workshop with he's not answering. We're working on doing a workshop with the military, live active military.
Okay.
Okay, well, anyway, I'm going to hang up the phone, everybody, and we'll take a little break, and I'll be right back with Mark Gonzalez.
Okay.
And I'll talk to you next week.
Nice talking to you, Sandy.
Okay, everybody, hang in there. They're going to probably, it'll probably be dead air for a few minutes here, but I'll be right back. Okay, thanks. Okay. Told you I'd get their attention. I just hung up the phone, and we're back. That wasn't too bad, right? That to go out and get a snack or something. So anyway, I have with me Mark Gonzalez. And,
hi, Sandy.
Hi, Mark. And Mark's in San Diego. He's been through my workshop for quite a long time. And Mark, we're just now. Mark, you have two kids, and I want to know how your Halloween was.
Oh, my Halloween was great. It was great. You know why I like Halloween? Because I can run my kids around, and guaranteed they'll go to sleep that night.
And then, but all that candy is going to keep them up. And your connection sounds like you're in a hall or something.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm wondering, are you on your cell phone?
Yes, I am.
Maybe that's what it is. What, do you guys go to door-to-door, or how do you do your Halloween?
Oh, we went trick-or-treating. We went all over the block. That's why I said the kids got so tired, I walked them for like 5 or 6 miles. They wanted to go home, but I said, no, you keep marching.
How old are your boys?
They are 5 and 7.
Okay.
They finally got the whole meaning of Halloween. They know what's up. They know that they get to go get candy, so they were totally into it.
And then did you dress up?
Yeah, you know what? I did. I had some Army clothes because my littlest wanted to be an Army man, and we bought him a costume, and I found some Army clothes in my garage, and I put that on, and I dressed up with him.
Oh, that sounds like fun. And then Alice got a break, right?
I made her kind of walk with us, too.
Oh, okay.
So we all went out as a family, did the Halloween trick-or-treat thing. It was great.
It didn't feel like Halloween because of what just happened, out here. Can you tell everybody a little bit of your background about your comedy career? Like you started three years ago?
My comedy career started about 3 years ago, and it's been nonstop ever since day one. I've just been working at it so hard. As a matter of fact, I just got back from the LA Comedy Festival this week. The week before that, I did the California Comedy Festival. I've done the Latino Laugh Festival. I perform all over California. I've performed as far away as Austin, Texas.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the LA Comedy Festival. What goes on over there?
Mm-hmm. Well, they just get a lot of great comics to come out, and fortunately, I was one of the comics they picked to come and perform. It had a good time. I performed with couple of comics that were just on Last Comic Standing. I think Jay London. He was there. He performed the night I did. So did Dante, who's been doing comedy for 20 something years. He's mm-hmm. he used to work at the Comedy Store years ago.
Yeah,
and, they get a lot of really good comics to come out and perform and just entertain people.
Is it for agents to find new talent, or is it like a showcase for everybody?
it's kind of like a showcase. I guess they call them industry nights where they try and get agents to come out and look at people and yeah.
So did you get a lot of contacts from it?
Not as many as I want to. You know, it's a constant uphill thing for me. I'm always, you know, when I do my comedy, I'm always out there making people laugh. But I'm always striving for more laughter, so I'm always working hard at it. So it's, and I never get what I want out of it. Working hard.
What would you say your best marketing tool is?
My best marketing tool?
Yeah, what's the best way to get yourself seen and heard? Well, you know, one thing I did just for everybody, you know, Mark was in my class. And I saw a lot of potential. And so what I did to get him, to get his career launched, is I had him open for Richard Pryor's daughter, Rain Pryor, and that was like the first big thing on his resume. So because of that, people said, oh, he must be okay. And, you know, and that's kind of how it launches. So what, you know, if anybody is trying to figure out how to launch a comedy career, if you're doing stand-up, is, you know, you open for somebody that's already well-known, and that's how most people do it.
Yeah, that helps out. I mean, I've done a lot of great shows. I've opened up for Rain Pryor, and I've also opened up for Tommy Chong. I think you were there that evening, and it's really cool when you get to perform with someone that you know and that you know from TV, and you go, oh, man, look at me. I'm on the same stage as this person.
It's
really a great experience.
And then one day when you get a little older, then you'll be bringing someone to open for you.
Yeah, I had a quote in the newspaper when I was in a contest a few months back, and the reporter asked me, you know, what are you striving for in comedy? And I told her pretty much what we just said. You know, I've opened up for a lot of great people and I've stood on the stage off to the side of the stage afterwards saying, wow, I just opened up for this person. Someday I want someone to go, wow, I just opened up for Mark Gonzalez. So that's what I'm striving for. That's what I'm
Well, people don't realize how much work really goes behind it. It's like, oh, look at that. You see somebody on TV doing stand-up. You know, and nobody realizes that there's years and years of stage time behind that one, you know, performance that you see on TV.
Oh, it is just
how people
years.
Make it look so easy, and it's not. And, you know, and it took you, you know, you've been wanting to do comedy for a long time before you did comedy.
I did a lot of improv. I did about 6 or 7 years of improv with troops throughout San Diego because that's where I'm from. And after a while, it just got to the point where I was like, you know, I need to do this on my own. I got rid of that safety net and decided to tackle the stage by myself, which is taking that first step on stage is probably the hardest one you'll ever take. That first 3 minutes up there seems like an hour. Because, you know, when you go to an open mic somewhere, they'll give you 3 minutes and you stand up there in front of people and you're like, how am I going to do this? And it seems like an eternity.
But you had the comfort of a workshop to help you get over that, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If it wasn't for the workshop, I think the first set I ever did in front of people was at your workshop, and it was, I think I did like 15 minutes.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
But you know, everybody, Mark emailed me for like 2 years before he got to class. It's like every class, okay, I'm coming to this one, and then that passes, and that went on for like 2 years.
Yeah, I might try this one. I might try that one. If there's someone out there and you're interested in doing comedy, the only thing stopping you from doing comedy is yourself. I was my biggest obstacle, as I am in my career today. I'm the only one that if something doesn't get accomplished, it's because I didn't put forth the effort to do it. And
now, are you making a living at it at this point yet?
Not yet. Yeah, I'm not at that point yet. I'm getting paid to do comedy, but not enough.
What do they pay comics now? I mean, I know I should know the answers, but I'm not out there. You know, I'm more just at the comedy store. I know what we pay, but what are they? I mean, I know people go out and they get like $25 or something if it's like a local coffee house, right? Or it's free most of the time.
Oh, if you're seeing a comic at a coffee house, you got to go out there and laugh at them and just give them. That's all they make. Is they make laughter and applause when you're doing coffee house shows or if you're doing open mic shows. If you're doing corporate work or stuff like that, you can get paid anywhere from $150 to $500.
Or up to $5,000. Up to
$5,000.
Well, it depends. You know what? Depends on your name.
Yeah, it depends on your name. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of big name comics that do that.
You know what? I want everyone to hear my favorite piece that you do. You know which one that is. I don't have to remind you.
Okay.
Can you give everybody my favorite piece? that you do?
Do you want me to do it now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I had to help my parents remove their old console TV the other day. I don't know if you know what a console TV is, but you used to have a rotary knob on it to change the channel. But their dial had broken off years ago, so my dad would always take the knob off of the stove. Then he'd be sitting there in the living room and said, "Hey, Marco, let me home. Put in the People's Court for me." I'd be, "Okay, Bobby, what channel is that on?" He said, "I think it's on Broil." And if it's not on Broil, me, I'd try 350 degrees because I know that show's on one of the hot channels. Meanwhile, my mom would run around the house, "Oh, ¿qué pasó? ¿Qué pasó? Who took my knob?" And she'd scratch around the house searching for another dial because she was always teaching my sister how to cook. And they'd be in the kitchen all like, "No, no, no, mija. Never cook the chicken on permanent press because it all burns. Chicken needs to be cooked on tumble." Is that the piece you're referring to?
Yeah.
I love
that. It's so visual.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing about doing comedy. I love that piece. I love all my material. You've got to really enjoy what you're doing. You've got to talk about things that make you happy, make you laugh. And if you do that, you won't get bored out there, because a lot of the times you do the same material night after night, which is what I do. I go out, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a week just performing in
and
front of
And speaking of that, yeah, you need to work on some new stuff now.
Yeah, I know that. I've been writing. I have been writing. I've got lots of stuff. But it's a confidence issue.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to build up confidence.
Well, you're welcome to come in the workshop and try out some pieces anytime if you need to. Or, you know, you're at that point in your life where you can just try it out on stage right in front of, you know, a regular audience. So
yeah, I do that. I do that. It's hard sometimes to try out new stuff because you get out there in front of people and you want to perform in front of them and you want to make them laugh and you want to make sure that what you're doing is going to make them laugh. So it's more of a confidence thing.
Would you say that's your most popular piece?
Pardon me?
What's your most popular piece?
It's probably the bit I just did because it ends with a Scooby impersonation and everyone.
Okay, let's hear the Scooby. Woo, Scooby Doo.
Yes, it's kind of like that. People love it. You know, it's people love things that are familiar to them, which is what makes my comedy. My comedy is very unique to me, but the experiences that I share with the people are experiences that everyone shares, which is what kind of brings the audience in and makes them happy and
mm-hmm.
makes them laugh.
It's actually, comedy is kind of, you know, it's based on truth, and then we add a little, and then it's a little absurd, so.
Yeah, it's based on truth, add a little bit of funny in there, and it happens. Comedy is magic, pretty much. It, you know, makes people happy, makes them laugh, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work.
We need it. Yeah, we need it now so bad.
Yeah, especially with what happened last week. It was
crazy. we have Jeff Garland coming in this weekend from HBO. Which show is he on?
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right, he's coming in this weekend.
Oh, great!
That would be good for you to go and say hi to those guys because those. You know, it's good to network like that.
Yeah, I love going down to the comic store and watching comics. You know, that's one of the things that people ask me. Don't you get tired of it? Don't you get tired of the comedy and the comics and everything? No, I never get tired of it because it's something I've always wanted to do. I'm always learning. I'm always trying to get better. So
it is a dream come true.
Pardon me?
It is a dream come true.
It is a dream come true. I'm really working hard at this to make this a career, so.
And
I'm quite fortunate because I have a wife that supports me behind it. She told me, too. She said, if I didn't think you were funny, I would tell you and I'd make you stop. But she supports me.
I know. She's so supportive. We have, in just a minute, we have Jahala coming up. We're going to be shifting gears big time on the show right here. She's an intuitive animal activist.
Well, thank you very much.
So we're going to take a break right now and get... we're going to get Jahala on the phone. I might have to hang up again. I'm not sure. Were you listening? I had to hang up the phone in order to get...
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge
Sandy Shore. You're listening to Happy Hour. We're back, coming to life on BBS Radio, where we're still trying to pull ourselves together here. I know they're switching servers, so bear with us. This will get smoother as each week goes along. I'm really proud to have Jehala on the line with me. She's an intuitive animal activist. Good evening.
Good evening, dear.
Good evening. So people that don't know who you are or what you do, can you give people a quick rundown?
Sure.
Okay.
I've been in the animal industry, and when I say industry, I've been a dog groomer. And
we didn't want to talk about dog grooming
for 40 years, and pretty much my whole life, because I'm just 52. I started out being a groomer at 12 years old. I started out grooming horses and cattle. And when I moved to the city, I figured there wasn't going to be a big need or demand for horse and cattle grooming. So I went to the little critters. And from there, my love for caring of animals and being an activist in their behalf just kind of grew. And that's where I'm at today.
Now, you also have tea poodles? Or
teacups, yeah.
Teacup poodles.
Yeah.
Little teacups.
The little itty-bitty ones that require so much special care.
Well, there's so much going on, awareness with animals these days. Also, another talent is, you know, you're intuitive, knowing what, like, the animals need, like your animals especially.
Yes. Yeah.
And, by the way, you're in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And you used to live in Seattle. And you moved to Tennessee because of earth changes coming up?
Absolutely.
That's why you moved. Wait,
yeah.
I mean, that could be a whole other show.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. The West Coast, especially around Seattle and stuff, is absolutely just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
But I literally, for the last 6 months, I spent about 8 years out there. The two earthquakes hit.
Yep.
And I began to say, you know what? And then when I kept seeing these visions, and I don't know if it was so much my visions or if there actually was, but I saw a meltdown of Mount Rainier. And that literally, the glaciers up there were not like they used to be, because it used to be white snow-capped.
Right.
And they're kind of turning brown now, especially in the summertime.
Isn't something smoking up there? I mean, when I was living out there, there was smoke coming out of one of them.
Yes. Yes.
Nobody says anything. They're like,
I know.
We're like dummy
down. They're oblivious.
Like, what's going on here? The earth is changing, and everybody's so busy trying to stay ahead of their lives that they don't even have time to look.
That's correct. And I said, God, don't let this be the day I paced the floor for probably 4, 5, 6 months before I got out of there. I said, God, please, let another day go by. Just let me leave.
That, you know, where you're living now, I mean, it's a lot of work what you're doing, but it must be really rewarding.
It is, dear. It is.
Now, what would you say the number one issue you have with animals?
People not knowing how to care for them properly. And they think because they take them to a vet that they've done the right thing, when in fact most vets are killing them.
Yeah, the vet killed my last dog.
Mm-hmm.
By giving him the wrong pills.
Yes. In fact, I'll put us on pause for a minute here. I find this very interesting because when we talked earlier this afternoon, there was a special segment that came on the Nashville, Tennessee News tonight about a vet up in Gallatin, Tennessee, for the shelter there, who was one of the workers became so concerned that they put a hidden video camera in there to show how they were euthanizing the dogs and cats. And all I can explain to you, dear, it's absolutely horrific. They're already receiving death threats, and the program's only been out a few hours. This man was, I'm going to get a little graphic here because I think people need to understand that when you get an animal and you take responsibility for them, it's like taking on a child, and they're just not a disposable commodity like so many here in the Southeast, particularly in the countryside,
mm-hmm.
think that animals are disposable. They are not. They're
right.
Living creatures. They're God's creations, and I say shame on you. But this vet, licensed with the government, licensed vet, hired by Sumner County here in Tennessee. So I'm going to encourage everybody tonight, if you want to raise a little more with the state, you need to make a phone call to Tennessee. But he was jabbing them in the heart, sometimes missing the heart, to kill them. He was not putting them to sleep. You know, we have these pictures when we take off the Levitan.
Oh, no. He was like just...
Yes.
Okay, we're not going to stay on this topic because it's too horrific. But
that's what I'm saying. But I think that's a reality that we all need to wake up to here.
You know what? I'm going to just say one thing. Nobody gets away with anything.
Oh, no.
You know, and I know, you know, with that football player guy and whatever.
Oh, yeah.
People get caught eventually. So, it's just... And these animals, you know, I can't talk about it because I'm getting nauseous.
I know.
But
so did I.
The truth, at least the truth has come out. And,
well,
and
that's my point, is that, you know, I've been saying these things for years about what goes on behind closed doors, and people always think, because there's this friendly face that meets you when you turn over a pet we can't keep, and now you're beginning to see what happens behind that closed door. And it's time. This is a period of time in our evolutionary bound forward that all truths, all things that have been in the dark are now coming forward.
What's the worst they're going to do? Just give him are they going to suspend his license, do you think? Or do you think?
I'm not sure what they're going to do. They did interview one of the city council members. I think it was the mayor of Gallatin. And he said, well, and of course, here's how, you know, politics. But they said, well, we've already discussed this with him due to some complaints here 4 or 5 months ago, and we told him he really should stop that. And this man makes $22,000 a year off of putting these animals to sleep. And he refused to be interviewed on camera, but he said his only defense for this was it's an ugly job.
Right.
That was his only defense.
Well,
no remorse.
Well, you've got your work cut out for you.
Yes, I do.
Let's move on to a little lighter stuff.
All right, dear.
Because there's too much negativity out there, and all I know is, you know, people create their own karma, and they get, you know, you eat potatoes, you get potatoes, and that's what everyone gets. So, but on to the positive. You know, when you say
this particular situation here can be turned into a positive by people coming together and saying, we won't accept this type of thing anymore.
That's what's happening.
Yes. And so, but you know,
now.
Those dark things have to come to light, and that's the period of time we're in.
So the dogs that but how do they get there in the first place to have to be put to sleep is like the big question. But there is a different mentality, absolutely different mentality in your neck of the woods than there is in Southern California.
Yeah.
You know, people are a lot different, you know.
All shelters should be no-kill.
That's true.
And there is
plenty of land out there. And especially,
you got that right.
There's plenty of land out there. Just people, we're so busy trying to survive.
Yes, and I really will emphasize again, let's really be conscientious about spaying and neuter animals.
Mm-hmm. That's a point. Now, I have two show dogs, and show dogs are not neutered.
I know. But that's a different situation. But so many people that buy these little guys, and for whatever reasons, they don't want to get them spayed or neutered, but they don't want to be responsible for keeping them inside when they're in, you know, their cycles, heat, or whatever. And
what about
so
my
dogs?
They're always in heat.
And then they have these unwanted litters of puppies, and the puppies suffer, the mama suffers. I mean... You wouldn't believe all the rescue work I do just because of these very reasons.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said you had 75 dogs.
Yes.
Fifty of those
are rescues, dear.
Do you, like, sit in a big pile and have them jumping all over you?
I do.
You sit down, and then you're, like, everybody's jumping on you.
Well,
right?
They're not all together in one room. I have, like, 5 or 6 rooms.
That'd be fun.
I go
open it all up and just sit there and play.
All day long, I'm kind of, like, in amongst all of them.
How many are in the house?
Oh, probably 35, 40.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
so
I mean, they're little guys, you know.
All day long.
Yeah, I clean. I clean, I cook, I feed, and, yeah, that's what we do all day long. And interact, and then we groom and bathe.
And you're a groom. Yeah, you're an expert groomer.
Yeah,
I'm having a problem trying to find a good groomer on San Diego.
That's what you were saying,
They have
You just kind of have to put that put that request out to the universe, and then the right person will just drop into your midst.
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe that.
Okay, so you moved. I'm going to change the subject now.
Okay.
You moved up there. You said there was like a crystal in the mountain, or, I mean, where you are. I mean, how did you know, like, what plot of land that you were going to get?
I didn't.
Because we're talking about earth changes.
They picked it for me, dear.
They pick it. Now you say they. Tell us who they are.
The Palladians.
Okay, the Palladians. Can you tell us your...
So that's where we're probably going to lose a whole lot of people here tonight.
No, this is a metaphysical internet radio show, so...
Open. I know.
What? Okay, so the Palladians are off-planet beings. I know who they are.
Yeah, they come from the Palladians.
And you say there's like a spaceship that comes in, because we had a little talk today.
Right.
And you've been aboard that. Do you consciously remember being on the spaceship?
Mm-hmm, I do.
What did it look like?
Well, the one that took me, and we went back. We tried to get back to Alcyon, but there was something wrong with the hyperdrive, and so we weren't able to actually make it all the way back. And of course, you know, it's real dangerous to come back into.
Where did they pull in to fix their ship at?
Pardon?
Is there like a gas station they pull in to fix their ship at?
I'm not sure.
You know, like, okay, the hyperdrive isn't working. Or the magnets. Don't they propel themselves through magnets?
If they did that, they didn't let me know it.
But you were in the ship, so what did it look like?
Inside the ship would be almost like, God, I hate, for lack of a better way to explain this, but it was like Will Smith, you know, Lost in Space.
Okay.
That type of interior.
Okay. Right.
That's a lot, because this is just one of the scout ships that they, you know, took me in. It wasn't one of the big motherships that, you know, hover around the planet all the time here lately.
Do they let you take a souvenir or anything?
No.
No souvenir?
They put a pyramid on my right arm.
Now, when you say they put it, what do you mean?
When I woke up the next morning, I had this very visible, in fact, my husband was like, what is that on your arm? And I said, well, it's a pyramid. I'm not sure why.
Was it solid in color, like a tattoo?
It was red. It was like a tattoo, yes.
Oh, okay, red.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
And then, very distinctive
what
red.
What kind of things did you talk about? Are they telepathic or they talk with their mouth?
No, they're very telepathic, huh?
Okay.
Yeah, all of your
off-worlders
are telepathic. They have evolved past the need for... a visible language, like we are in 3D.
And so they're the ones that hinted to you on where a good place for you to live would be.
Pretty much.
And then so you moved there. You said
my whole life has been guided by them here in the last 10, 15 years.
Now, what did they say about earth changes coming up? Because that seems to be the hot topic these days. Like,
well, there's a lot of changes coming up there. We're already in them, in case no one can look around and see. Have the seasons not all seem like they're blending into one?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what was spring is now fall, what was summer is now winter, and vice versa. I mean, we're experiencing this here in the Southeast tremendously.
I think we're getting more droughty. Well, the West is becoming drought.
Oh, well, we're in extreme drought here. There's 3 million people sitting in Atlanta, Georgia, about 240 miles from us here in the Smoky Mountains. They're probably going to be converging on us within the next 3 or 4 months.
Mm.
They have no water. Lake Lanier is dried up, is gone.
I thought Monsanto's buying all the water rights.
No. No. This is called a lack. I would like to go along with that conspiracy in that aspect, but no. We've had no rain. It's just unbelievable.
Okay,
and has been days, weeks, months now.
So here's the point. Everybody's working 3 jobs.
Yep.
Our earth is changing now, and I think it's a natural cycle. I think we're contributing to, obviously, some of it. We have to be because of the pollution.
Oh, you mean, am I buying into Al Gore's global warming and humans?
No, I think we have a little bit to do with it, but not all of it.
Oh, maybe 5%, 10%.
Okay. So what do the Palladians tell you what to do?
Basically, hunker down and prepare. But the most important thing to do is prepare in a spiritual sense. And
yeah, we hear that one a lot. What about, you said, you gave us a timeline.
Yeah. No one, of course, knows, and even the good book, the Bible, although I'm not a real Christian person, I do believe in creation, creator. So therefore, we do not know our Father's time, mm-hmm. as they say. But
right.
I can tell you this, and this comes from very high credentialed sources, is that all of the government entities, the alphabet companies, you know, the CIA, FBI, IRS, all of them, they have a mandate, and they've moved this up actually a year. It was 2010, and they've moved it up to January 2009. There's a gentleman who has the Liberty Man. His name is John Moore, mm-hmm. and he's a former Green Beret out of the Vietnam era. He's been a, detective for, I believe it's the Phoenix Air Police Department for like 20 years. Yeah, but he has a lot of friends that were in the Navy, and they saw maps when they had some of these debriefings. Of course, very...
On where they're going to go, right?
That's right.
And
they've been shown maps. Our own government, dear, knows what's coming down.
But everybody for years knows that the government has underground bunkers going on.
Correct.
And everybody knows that. And they're
correct.
Up in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and did you also know that in the last 3 or 4 months that all of the companies who make the MREs for the military
mm-hmm.
have been under contract for private government facilities to make, they're buying up all of the MREs. If no one believes
What's
me, go out and start trying to buy some.
What's an MRE?
Meals ready something.
Oh.
MREs, you know, where soldiers are out there in the field and they pop open this bag, you know, they eat the food.
Oh,
MREs.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, the government has
Army
a huge order with all of the companies who make those.
Oh, prepackaged Army food. That
right.
lasts years.
Right.
So basically people are on limited income, so there's going to be a little problem I foresee happening. You know, people are not able to move, you know, but at least if they're aware, they can duck and cover.
Need to get aware, and I think that, I mean, we need to pull our heads up out of the sand and really get busy here. If you think that this is, of course, you know, the Talking Heads media wants us to believe that this is just a little crunch that the dollar bill is going through, This is pretty much the end of our financial system around the world.
I'm more interested in hearing about our off-planet beings, about, you know, are they here trying to help us or, you know?
Well, yeah. Most of them. There are those, though, that are not here for the betterment of mankind.
Right. Let's not go there because those are the creepy...
Right, exactly.
People. What about... What do the Palladians look like? I know there's pictures of them, and they've been talked about for years, and their name isn't even
they're
pronounced
gorgeous.
That way.
Is that they're gorgeous.
Pardon me?
They are gorgeous people.
Do they have, aren't they called like the, there's a different name.
Like Nordics, yeah.
The what?
A Nordic.
No, they call, the name Palladians, is it pronounced differently or something?
Well, Billy Myers calls them Plajarans. But I mean, if you spell it in the English language, it spells out to Palladian.
So how old is their race?
Oh boy, they go back millions of years.
Now they come to you and craft above your house. And
yeah, they're here to protect for what
I
have to do.
That you have one come over my house and say hi to me.
I will put that.
And we'll send a comedian aboard.
I'll put that request in.
The planet Palladies.
Yeah.
I'm being really funny and sarcastic. I notice there's a truth to everything. So, you know, I've had my own ET experiences, so I know. That's why I'm on BBS Radio, because we can say what we want. Pretty
yeah.
Much. What? Okay.
Well, I actually would have to say, dear, that I haven't had the little Greys visit me.
I just heard they're future human beings. Someone told me that.
That's correct. Burgess. Burris. Yeah. What's his first name?
I don't know.
Well, he was supposedly down there in Area 51. And he actually had contact with, if I could only think of his first name.
So was that like in the 50s or 40s when that happened?
No, dear. We're talking about right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he actually has a video that he's done, and the MJ-12 or... Yeah, it was MJ-12 that allowed him to...
And the Greys told him that's what we're going to be in, what, and around 3,000.
There are two timelines right now from what I can delineate from watching the video of his confession, shall we say, that there's two timelines, and they actually have a time machine, and they have messed with, well, like the Manhattan Project.
Right.
And they've actually ripped a hole into the fabric of time.
Who ripped the hole?
When they did this Manhattan Project there.
Oh, I heard about that.
With, you know, Einstein and all
that. Then all the aliens come through?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, well, it had
over at Montauk. Remember the Montauk Project? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not all fairy tale stuff. That's quite real.
Mm-hmm.
And there are insiders that, at the risk and peril of their own lives, that have come forward to talk about that.
Well, absolutely. People are knocked off left and right.
Absolutely.
It's just so much going on. I don't like to think negative of anything, because
why? But we do have to be realistic, too.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you have to get your facts straight as far as, you know, they try to discredit, you know, they're out there discrediting all these stories. So
I know.
They got it's coming and going.
Mm-hmm.
You have to just follow your heart. You
that's all part of the game plan, see.
Absolutely.
To keep people so confused
just
that they don't know what to
believe.
It's
a weather balloon. But what about, back to the Pleiades, so they're around, they have this big mothership way out there in space, and then the little baby ships come in and visit us? Is that
the scout ships. Yeah.
What do they do when they come here? I mean, why are they coming here?
They're making contact with some of their star seeds that are here.
Well, I'd like to get them on the radio.
And it is dangerous for them.
It is, huh?
Well, I mean, our government shoots them down all the time.
Well, they can land in my yard. I got a nice big yard. Or they can, you know, right off the ocean.
The only problem is, dear,
right,
you are north
ocean.
Of the equator. Most of their contact is being made south of the border, shall we say.
Okay.
They're more conducive down
they
there.
Can't make
the governments
impact.
Are not ready to shoot them out of the sky.
Right. That's why they're always in Mexico or,
right.
or somewhere.
Correct.
I guess, yeah.
You know, the Mexican government released that tape of all those UFOs, remember?
Yeah, I remember that.
That the military jets were up there with them.
Are those Palladians and those?
Well, yeah, some of them. But it's part of the Galactic Federation, too, dear.
Oh.
And so there are a lot of different species that are here.
Don't they have, like, a phone in their ship they can just call and come on the air with us?
Don't we wish.
What?
Don't we wish.
I wonder if
we'd all have to get tuned up and get with the program and move on into the higher fourth and fifth dimension so that we can communicate with them on a telepathy level.
Now, I wonder what they do on their planet. I mean, what kind of activities
do they
have?
Well, it certainly isn't what we're doing down here.
Well, I'm positive that we're in so many cultures.
We're in self-destruct mode down here.
Yeah, we are. Isn't that freaky?
Yeah.
That people like, you know, people have
and that's what, they got so tired of fighting with the Dracos. And,
the Dracos are these snake, these lizard people.
You know the Dracos, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to go into that too much further, but.
Okay, so they're out cruising around, they're on their spaceship, and they're just checking in on our planet that's, yeah, like you said, ready to, well, the planet's going to do itself in, so we don't have to worry about the wars and stuff, because Mother Earth is going to take care of herself.
Well, she has to, dear.
Right.
Because
then all of us light workers are here, I won't say light workers, but lighthearted people are trying to lighten things up for everybody.
Right.
You know, I feel like that's what I'm here to do is inspire people to be more lighthearted about what's going on because...
Lighthearted, but also with a sense that we are responsible. We are the stewards of this planet.
But we didn't do it, though. I mean, we came here... I feel like I came here to watch. That's what I feel like. You know, I'm trying to help out a little, but the Palladians are here to do what? Why are they here?
They're only here to help out those that are their own.
Do you hear this beep noise?
Yes, I hear
the beep. Is
that
the Palladians calling?
Are they trying to tell us time's up?
Well, I guess that's the end of our show for tonight. Thank you so very much. We'll have you on again.
Okay, dear.
And see everybody. Talk to everybody next Thursday. Have a great evening, everybody.
You too, dear. And thank you for having me on.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.